You are listening to Middle East Monitor Conversations, bringing you lively discussions with prominent voices from the region and beyond, as we delve deeper into issues shaping the Middle East and North Africa, from politics to culture and the arts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another week with Memo's Conversation. I am Anjuman Rahman, a writer at Middle East Monitor, and today I'd love to welcome Dina Takruri as our guest, an award-winning Al Jazeera journalist and presenter, who also co-authored the book They Called Me a Lioness, A Palestinian Girl's Fight for Freedom, based on the famous Palestinian activist Ahad Tamimi from the village Nabi Saleh, based in the occupied West Bank. So welcome, Dina, and thank you for taking the time to join us. But also congratulations. The book has been listed as one of this year's Palestine's Book Awards. So congratulations.
And thank you. Thank you so much for that honor, for the introduction, and it's really nice to be here.
Okay, so Dina, there's so much to talk about, but what I'm aware of is you had the opportunity to not only meet Ahad Tamimi, but you also spent a significant amount of time with her, and you know your relationship developed, which finally resulted into a whole memoir about her. So what I'd like to begin by is exploring how you came about initially meeting her, and then how the process unfolded for you guys to come to the decision that a book had to be written about her. You know, when it comes to the Palestinian landscape and its politics, there's a lot of activists. So why did you feel a book had to be written about her? Why did you feel everyone else needs to also know her and get to know her on a personal level, and not what we just know when we see what we see of her on the screen?
I think so much of it actually just comes down to kismet. So 5 years ago, in the summer of 2018, I was in Palestine visiting my family in the occupied West Bank, which I do often. Most of my trips lately have been reporting trips, but I was there just on a summer vacation with my mom, just trying to, you know, spend time with family and enjoy. That was the time during which she was serving her 8-month prison sentence. And sometime in mid-July, I was supposed to fly home, but a few activists who were close to her family and working on the campaign for her freedom suggested that I stay, that she was expected to be released within the next week or two, and that I should report on it. So I pitched that idea to my bosses at AJ Plus. I pitched the idea of doing a documentary basically about her generation, you know, Palestine's young resistance and background of her story. And they approved it, luckily. So from there, I went to Nabi Saleh and I spent a week there prior to her release reporting and getting to know the backstory of this courageous young girl that had captivated the world with her story, with that famous slap. I spent time with her father, with her brothers, with her aunts and uncles, and I really got to know the backstory of this small village of Nabi Saleh in the West Bank that has been in the headlines for years for bravely waging a nonviolent resistance movement to Israel's occupation and specifically to the illegal Israeli settlement of Halamish across the road. So that was all sort of just like the background reporting for this documentary, and it all culminated in the final sort of interview with her on the day of her release. So I was there along with hundreds of other journalists from around the world the day she was released, which was absolute chaos, you know, and sort of like, you know, from early dawn until the afternoon, we just kind of followed her movements. When is she getting out? What checkpoint is she being released from? What, whatever.
I think she gave an insight about that day in the memoir, isn't it? Yeah. She couldn't even catch a break and she was feeling really overwhelmed.
Absolutely. I mean, it was total chaos for anyone. It was chaos for me there as a journalist, let alone as a then 17-year-old. But, you know, she got out and she handled herself despite being swarmed by cameras and family and loved ones. She carried herself with such grace and poise. And that's the first thing that struck me about her. You know, she had every right to be traumatized, to want to just like shut out the world. But she has this like really incredible sense of duty that she had from that day onwards. She gave a press conference with great eloquence where she talked about the demands of the prisoners. She talked about her experience, you know, behind bars. And the following day, I was fortunate to be granted basically the first sit-down interview with her one-on-one. And so I did that. And, you know, it was she and I in her backyard, and I interviewed her for about 30, 40 minutes, possibly more in Arabic. And it was really lucky because she was still fresh and she hadn't told her story yet. And she wasn't exhausted. And I think she found in me and she saw in me another, you know, sort of young Arab Palestinian woman who could speak to her in Arabic, who cared about her feelings, who cared about her as a person. And I felt a bond right then and there. So then we, you know, we put that interview out. I go back to home to San Francisco to produce basically this documentary. And I was the lead producer on it, which means, you know, when you're doing a documentary, you're watching footage over and over again. And, you know, for Ahed's story and for the people of Nebi Saleh, everything is so documented. Oh, there's my cat's cameo. Everything is so documented on film because they have long known that the camera is their weapon. So the marches and the protests and the unfortunate killing and shooting of, you know, her various family members were all there on camera. So I would watch these things to incorporate them into the documentary, and they stuck with me. And they, you know, I've reported from around the world on a lot of difficult things, but this story, for some reason, I couldn't shake. And I found myself dreaming about the people of Nebi Saleh, these like kind, gracious people that had opened their homes to me and took me in and, you know, welcomed me as a journalist, as a fellow Palestinian. It really stuck with me. You know, we put the documentary out, and her story just, it didn't leave me. So months later, I approached Ahed and her family with the idea of, you know, there's so much more that hasn't been told. There's so much more to this young woman than one documentary or one interview or like a news cycle can capture. How about we write this book? And they agreed. We got a book deal with One World Penguin Random House, and the rest is history.
Okay. Yeah, a lot of what you said, it was incorporated in the memoir, you know, her stamina in being able to take all the attention and remain strong in the face of all this publicity and attention and stick to her values throughout the whole book. And a lot of it, which is also kind of basically documented in the memoir, is kind of she was born into this, you know, growing up to both parents who are both very active and, you know, very on the scene, and, you know, growing up with the settlement just opposite their village. And so while you were there, you got to experience firsthand of what they've also been going through, you know, for her since birth. And, you know, she's had to suffer, you know, with her father being imprisoned multiple times, and, you know, seeing her own cousins and brothers being basically abused by the Israeli soldiers, you know, which resulted in that slap. When you got to interact with her, you got to see all sides of Ahed Tamimi, you know, not just her strong side, also moments of vulnerability, you know, which she opened up to you only about. What else do you think is that not many people are aware about Ahed Tamimi when it comes to her or her family, but you got to see yourself? And why do you think it was important to include that in the book?
Yeah. So just to follow up, like, yes, so that was the reporting in 2018. And then I flew back out once we got the book deal a little over a year later and sat with her at length, which is, I think, the moments that you're describing too, like days on end, hours on end, alone in a room talking about everything. I had struck me just, you know, I think a lot of people, perhaps maybe within Palestinian society too, were quick to just kind of, you know, assume that she's enjoying this fame or that she likes the spotlight. And I can tell you it couldn't be further from the truth. Ahed is someone who's incredibly humble, kind of shy, very grounded, shuns the spotlight at every opportunity she gets. She says, this is not about me. She uses her platform to shed light on the Palestinian plight and on the plight of Palestinian prisoners and everybody else. I just, she strikes me as just a very grounded, kind, humble, reluctant hero, you know, and that to me makes her all the more endearing. She's also incredibly wise beyond her years. Like, she spent much of her childhood, you know, sitting and listening to the conversations of her father and, you know, her relatives who had been in prison, who had political consciousness and awareness, who talked about, you know, nonviolent resistance movements, who talked to the activists, and she absorbed a lot. So she's very wise beyond her years. She has a very sophisticated understanding of the world, understanding of the Palestinian struggle. And she's also, at the end of the day, she's just a normal, you know, now she's a young woman, but at the time she was just a normal child. Like, I think we tend to really romanticize Palestinian children as these brave, you know, the boys are little men and they're courageous and it's a different brand of courage. And that's true. But first and foremost, they are children, right? So if you read the book, you'll read about the fear, like the overwhelming fear she had as a young child when these protests started, and when Israel, you know, the Israeli forces began firing tear gas and stun grenades and eventually live ammunition at the villagers. She would hide under the table for hours and hours and beg and pray her and beg her parents not to go out. You know, like, she was a fearful child, just as anyone would be in that circumstance. And she overcame that fear. And so I think, you know, she was really vulnerable with me in talking about all these different aspects of her life and her own development. And I try to capture that because I think it's very important to recognize the multifacetedness of children like her and of people who live in those type of circumstances.
They're kind of left with no choice but to adapt to the situation.
Exactly.
Yeah, she was. I remember well that she was reluctant in joining the weekly protests as well. It took her time to actually go out there. And then she started from afar and then eventually joined in all the chaos at the forefront of the marches. So as you were documenting every stage of her life so far, and, you know, from, you know, having to sacrifice from joining in the school exams because they imprisoned her during that time. But then, you know, she had life to, she found newfound ambitions during her time in imprisonment because she got to meet you know, Khalida Jarrar, and, you know, the school setups within the prison system, and, you know, and then having to look after her family by herself. You know, each stage of her life, it just seemed to, like, transform her, and she experienced a serious growth out of no choice, but right. She handled it really well. What would you say, in your point of view, as, I'll say, a friend of hers now, as well as a co-author, would you say was the most transformative period for Ahad?
I don't know if there was one single most transformative experience. I think a lot of the violence that she witnessed and experienced herself as a child sort of helped make her this really brave, fearless, ready to confront the occupation and you know, by any means necessary. That was definitely formative. I think, you know, in the prison section of the book, we definitely detail her political consciousness and how, through the education of fellow detainees like Khalida Jarrar, she and the other young women and girls learned humanitarian law and international human rights law. And she was able to understand how the life that she has lived under this brutal military occupation in Israel has been one constant international law violation after another. You know, she was able to name the terms and detail every single experience from the moment of her arrest to how they took her, you know, in a jeep, abducted her in the middle of the night without a warrant, without a parent, without anything, to her interrogation, which was conducted by men without a, there should have been a woman in the room. There was not. There should have been a parent in the room, a lawyer in the room, none of them. To, you know, every single moment of her experience, she realizes, and she even says in the book, like, I haven't been living a life. I've just been living one giant violation. And I think that was a very pivotal and transformational experience, just that education and how it empowered her with this knowledge and vocabulary and tools to better articulate how what she had experienced and what the Palestinian people are experiencing is completely unconscionable, but also tremendous numbers of violations of international law.
How did you feel during the process of writing this book and, you know, observing her, listening to her, being in conversation with her, and also seeing the daily life, the, you know, the normal daily life of her spent eating with her family, talking with her family? You know, we also get an insight of that normality within the memoir as well. I'd say there's a huge contrast of the normality and the abnormalities when it comes to the, you know, the illegal occupation and the restrictions imposed as a result of those abnormalities. What touched you as the co-author and, you know, putting it together?
First and foremost, I just felt incredibly privileged and grateful and fortunate that she trusted me enough to embark on this journey with me. And, you know, there were times when we were like alone in that room and I was interviewing her where it was a roller coaster of emotions. At times I was completely riveted by what she was telling me, by details of, like, you know, just her internal monologue, her thinking, her what goes on in her head when she's in high school and they're going to Beit Il to protest and they're covering themselves with keffiyehs and they're getting tires from the gas station to give to the guys to light on fire and create a smoke screen. Like, those little tiny details are just super fascinating to me, as well as, you know, when she was detailing how, for example, like, just with the, I've read a lot about Israeli prisons. I visited some, but I didn't know just sort of the TikTok day-to-day, like, minute details, which are also incredibly interesting, tragic, horrifying, but interesting. Like, we write about the transfer vehicle that takes the prisoners from the prison to their court, military court trials in the Bosta, and how horrific that journey is. And so that was like, you know, there were so many moments where I was like, wow, I've never heard this. I can't wait for other people to read this. Like, this has to be known.
Yeah, I didn't know they were in the Bosta with other prisoners who are murderers. Yes. And other Israeli prisoners as well.
Israeli civilian criminal prisoners.
Yeah, I did not
murder, rape, drugs, everything.
That's what, yeah. The book really details such an extent, like even her waiting outside the trial room in a metal cage. And she's sitting there for hours and, you know, she's feeling the metal in her bones, the coldness, the
pain. Right.
Like, the details that went into it is just, it might be like a page long, but it felt like a whole book in that page, because we also, as readers, feel to some extent the pain and the humiliation and the tragicness of it all. And so as us readers reading it, getting emotional, I can't imagine how you directly hearing it is just,
yeah. You know, at the time while I was interviewing her, it was definitely, you know, it was definitely an emotional roller coaster. There were times where I cried because what she's telling me is incredibly sad. And then you're sitting there and you're thinking, this girl went through all of this. She saw all of this. She saw her uncle murdered in front of her. She saw her mother shot as a child. And, you know, for me as a Palestinian American who grew up in the US, you know, there's always this, but who visits often, and all my family is pretty much in the West Bank. There's always this feeling of like, that could have easily been me. This could have been my life, and it's not. And I have this privilege and I have this platform as a journalist, and what can I do with it? And so I was really trying to put that to use. But there were also moments where we laughed a lot because she's funny, and she would tell me like the pranks they pulled in prison, or just like, you know, the funny moments of her childhood. And then there were moments interviewing her where I was just completely inspired and blown away. Like, this girl is a force. I think she's a once in a generation voice. And I remember, and I don't want to spoil the book for those who haven't read it, but there was a moment towards the end of our, you know, time together in interviews where I was like, okay, I had like, you know, the reader at this point, they've read all about your life. They've read about your childhood. They've read about your relatives who were shot and killed. They've read about your imprisonment. They understand the occupation. They understand these other Palestinian children who were burned or killed, Mohammed Abu Khdeir or, you know, Ahmed Dawabshe. What do you want to leave the readers with? And she just had this very compelling call to action, you know, that just flowed out of her mouth just so eloquently. Like, you know, you've read all this and you have a choice to make. Are you going to put this book down and just go about your life? Or are you going to do something? What would you do if you saw your, you know, parents arrested, your relatives killed? How would you want the world to respond? And I don't know, it was just so moving to me, as well as her optimism that this will not last forever, that, you know, everything built with might eventually falls, and her really unwavering hope and commitment that the next generation of Palestinian children, that a girl like her in future years won't have to live the life she did. She truly believes that's going to happen. You know, she believes this occupation will end and that her people will see liberation. And for me, that just was very inspiring. And so, yeah, there was, like I said, a wave of emotions. I think at the time I was just trying to get through it, and then writing the book, I was also just trying to get through it. It was also like the peak of the pandemic, you know, 2020, when I wrote basically the manuscript. And here in California, we also had crazy wildfires, and you couldn't go inside, you couldn't go outside. It was just a really, really dark time. And I think I was just trying to get through it. But then almost a year later, I don't know when, I recorded the audiobook a little over a year ago. It was when I sat down and I recorded the audiobook, and I'm like reading the book out loud, that I cried several times. Like it all just sort of came back to me and it came to the surface. And I had just returned from Palestine where I did another reporting trip, and Shireen Abu Akleh, who's my late friend and colleague, had, you know, been murdered not long before that. And so all of the sort of emotions and the trauma of it all that was buried came to the surface. And the producers were like, cry, emotion is good while you're reading. And I was like, well, just get through my song. So I encourage people to listen to it. Tell me what you think. But yeah, you know, you can't hear these stories and do this kind of work and not feel anything. And I think as a journalist, I'm a very feeling person, and I try to channel that into my work. And I hope that's what makes it unique and what makes it compelling for the people who are reading it or watching it.
Yes, there's a strong sensitivity and purpose within the lines of the book, which I really appreciated. You know, there are moments you feel totally hopeless, but then it's automatically redeemed within the next stage of the book, and it just flows really, really well. Like you said, the ending was beautiful, and what kind of made me laugh and also admire her even more is when you included how, you know, she's fearless. She doesn't hesitate to call out whoever needs to be called out. So whether it came to, no matter their position, so when it came to Mahmoud Abbas and, you know, the coordination with Israel in the name of security, or even Turkey's President Erdogan, you know, they're having a casual tea day, and then she just, you know, straight up asks, well, why do I need a visa? But these Israelis don't. So the way you included her character and, you know, her personality traits that make her who she is as a whole was really amazing, because it definitely provided a different perspective of her than what the 2 minutes that we see on TV, just her slapping a soldier and, you know, getting a few headlines, and she has this, you know, whether it's a straight face, but we see she even addresses her straight face is her wig because she's nervous, you know, she feels a sense of responsibility. She doesn't want to be on camera. She doesn't want to be known something as she only has one purpose, and that is, you know, urging for the freedom of Palestine and being actionable about it. So great. It's been really great the way you went about reading it. So writing it. So how has the reaction and responses been to, is it as you anticipated? Because, you know, anyone who writes about Palestine, there can be immediate backlash. And this memoir is very powerful. So how did it go following the publication of it?
No, I want to say, alhamdulillah, it's been good. I was expecting a lot of backlash just because it's par for the course when you're doing any sort of Palestine work, right? As you just said. And so actually for the longest time, I didn't even publicize the fact that I was working on it or that we had this book deal, just because I didn't want the trolls to come out or some sort of, you know, attacks or anyone to derail the process. But fortunately, yeah, it's been mostly a lot of love, a lot of praise. The reviews have been really excellent. People have told me they've been really moved by it. One thing that the family and her family were very clear on, and I was in agreement with, is that we wanted this book to be very accessible, and we tried to write it as such so that anyone can pick it up and understand sort of like what's happening in modern day Palestine, what it's like to live under occupation, to grow up as a child under it today. And what they constantly say, Ahed and her family, is this is not Ahed's story. This is a story of all of Palestine. And I really tried to channel that to, yes, it's about this one incredibly compelling young woman who's had this remarkable life at such a young age, but she's representative of so many people like her. And I think the readers took that away. I was just at an event in the Bay Area here in California on Sunday. And, you know, I spoke and I mentioned the book. And afterwards, all of these aunties, like really older Palestinian aunties who were, some are probably older than Israel, you know, came up to me, and some had tears in their eyes, and they said, I read your book and it was so good. And it was so, and it made me cry. You made me cry. I read so many books about Palestine. And that to me was so special. You know, it was so special that hopefully they see their experience, you know, in these pages, you know, like represented on a, you know, this is a mainstream US publisher, which I'm very proud of, that they published this book, One World, Penguin Random House, didn't censor anything, didn't tell us to sugarcoat anything. We told it like it was. And I think it's empowering. And I think we're in this new era where Palestinian stories are being told by Palestinians. you know, and hopefully that's a step towards progress. But yeah, just seeing sort of the emotional resonance and impact with people took away from this book, Palestinian and not Palestinian alike, has been very heartening for me.
Well, Dina, I got to address everything I wanted to when it came to this book. Is there anything else you would like? Is there any possibility, you know, part two maybe? Or what's
No, but not thinking part two. I do want to say that we just marked the 1 year since it was published, and it just came out in paperback. So I'm carrying the paperback version here, which I'm, you know, super excited about. And yeah, I would encourage anyone to buy it where books are sold, in your local bookstore, even on Amazon. It actually helps authors when you leave a review there. It's on e-reader, it's, you know, and it's also an audiobook. So thank you so much for this interview, for this, for to be shortlisted is such an honor. We're really excited about, and yeah, it's been great chatting.
No, congratulations to you, and thank you to you for bringing this book about. And you know, it's significant to be able to educate people when it comes to these leading figures, and to make people aware of what's happening out there and who's doing what about it. So thank you, Dina, and thank you to our viewers for joining today, and see you next time. And thank you, Dina. Take care.
This was Middle East Monitor Conversations, brought to you by the Middle East Monitor in London.